unfortunately, this time it is 100% recording right now.
Alright, cool.
That's good.
So
let's get to it.
Let's get to it.
Welcome, guys, to the Toronto Indie Guys Podcast, episode 26 now. I'm here with my co-host, Max Brown.
I'm Max Brown. Happy to be here for 25 plus one.
And also, I'm Arthur Maris, if you didn't know. But more importantly, today we have Alex Bethke in the recording studio today, if you call it that.
Recording studio located at the fabulous George Brown Library.
Which
we scammed our way into. No, I'm totally taking that course next year. I totally am.
The scam George Brown course?
Yeah. It's we pretty much did Ocean's 11, except there's three. And it was just to get a room for 2 hours.
No cash settlement at the end.
No, this would not make a good movie. But yes, today we have with us Alex Bethke from Golden Gear Games.
Hello. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
No problem.
Pleasure to have you here.
Sorry, Andrew's not here. I think I'm going to have to take the bad on that one. You know, I am in charge of the scheduling stuff. I didn't update the calendar. I did tell him what time to be here, but, you know, it's all good. It's all good. It's my bad.
Well, we'll get another time where we can get the two of you together. We can get some of that witty repartee. Yeah.
Well, see, the truth is I'm actually just trying to hog all the glory, right?
It must
like,
be.
Oh, yeah.
Must be.
Two. Yeah, that's where you want to be.
Because, like, whenever we talk about Golden Gear, you say, yeah, I did that. Yeah. And Andrew can't really object or anything because...
He's not here.
Yeah, you know, this podcast will go to the Hand Eye Society and... You'll be famous,
yeah.
You know?
We're just gonna disable comments on the page so we can't even post on it underneath.
Yeah, Andrew's just that guy that works in my company. No, he's the co-founder.
So tell us a bit about the past of Golden Gear. Like, how did you two guys meet and decide to actually
Well, we met 7 years ago now.
Andrew actually hired me at Cryptologic, where we were doing casino software for about 5 years. And there's a couple different versions of the story, but basically we got to a point where I knew I was on my way out of the company, and I had a really good time working with Andrew, and it basically was just like, let's do something with this. We've done some great work. Let's see if we can keep that momentum going. And so, you know, I quit the company, and Andrew started looking for some contract work to hold him over while he was still doing the full-time stuff, and then eventually he quit, and we started focusing on Golden Gear full-time, and that was about 2 years ago now.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool.
And you guys have all been doing, I guess, TO Jam for the past 7 years, or at least since it started, right?
Yeah, Andrew's been doing it longer. He was at the pre-Toe Jam, and is credited as one of the original, I believe, 6 founders who had sort of gotten that whole event to go. I only know about the event actually through Andrew, so it was working at Cryptologic that he was like, hey, you like making games? There's this cool thing I do every year. Well, I guess he'd only done it like 1 year, a year and a half at that point. And he's like, come on out. And I signed up and was just like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. So it was an interesting experience. I didn't really like know him too well at that point, so it was like, yeah, you know, that's the guy I work with type thing, and I was kind of just there by myself, but I like met Brian Hinson-Creighton there just randomly and have been good, you know, I like consider him a friend of mine since then, and just have met tons of people over the years through Toe Jam now and gotten to actually help out organizing it, so yeah
that's right, because you were a core team organizer for Toe Jam 7.
Yeah, well, like yourself,
yeah.
Arthur. Yeah, we were there helping out.
Let's just plug that a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, we got
Toe Jam.
Even the organizer table right here.
Yeah. No, it was an amazing experience. I really enjoyed, you know, both participating in it and helping out this year on the organizing side. It's always interesting to see how much work goes into these things. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things, even at the event, I kept telling people, I'm like, if you think you know how hard we're working for you right now, you have no idea. Because I thought I knew. And then I saw... You know, my favorite story to tell is the seating chart. The seating chart alone takes like 4 hours of manual effort, of very careful consideration of how to balance all the rooms and handle special requests and stuff. So it's just awesome the amount of work that Jim and Em and their assistants have done over the years. So I was really glad just to be able to help out.
Yeah, I can remember that day when we first came in before... people had started coming in, and I saw you at the table there. I'm like, oh, hey, Alex, how's this going? And you just gave me this look of just utter desperation, just
yeah.
Shook your head. And
Well, I mean, it depends on when you showed up. The start of the event was wild, because they kind of were just like, yeah, we need someone to take the table. So they threw me down there with a couple of the ladies to help out, and we had no idea what we were doing. You know, in the end, like, we basically just worked from one list that we were quickly passing around to each other to try and find people's names. We were kind of expecting a slow trickle at the beginning, and of course there was utter foolishness and naivety on my own part, because I've been at Toe Jam on like the starting day a bunch of times and seen the other 30, 40, 50 freaks who are like, nah, screw work today, I'm gonna go to Toe Jam. So yeah, we were like hit by 100 people at like all at once. So if you came after that, that would definitely be why. I was looking pretty frazzled at that point.
It was like 9 or 10 a.m. I think.
Yeah, between like about 10 to 1, it was just like non-stop. We were just scrambling constantly, trying to register people, give them their badges and everything. And then we were working from like different versions of the list. So after we'd gotten the first rush of people in, you know, M comes by and was said something along the lines about consolidating it all into one list, at which point we all were just like, what? Okay, so when we get a break in the crowd, we'll definitely do that. And so, you know, one of the ladies took all the lists and cross-referenced everything, so it was pretty nuts. Especially considering it was like, you know, 400 names, 100 plus names.
Yeah, that was a huge crowd this year.
Oh, but it was such an amazing event. Like, anyone who saw me there definitely could see that I was having a good time. I usually had a pretty big smile on my face and was running around full of energy, talking to everyone. It was
really fun, yeah. And the year before that, 2 years ago, TO Jam, you did make a game for that, right? You did.
Yeah, I mean, like, we've made, I think, 5 Toe Jam games that I've done now. So
the last, that was
Poppycock.
Yeah, that was it, where you're running away from the tentacles outside the screen,
riding
right?
The werewolf and stuff. Yeah. So we still have a version of that, like, deep in the Golden Gear archives that's been halfway ported over for a mobile release, because we'd love to do something with that. You know, maybe not like go back all the way into the design and like put in a whole like microtransaction thing, just really clean up what we had at Toe Jam and just release it as basically a free game that people can play. Get around to it eventually.
It'd be pretty cool. Yeah, I remember you also did the talk at IGDA meeting about, there was that Andrew.
Yeah, well, it was both of us actually. We did the pre-mortem.
Right, what it was, yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that one. I thought it was really funny because Andrew had worked like all night the night before and hadn't really slept. And right before the event, he and I were kind of, you know, because we had done the majority of the Toe Jams together. So we're like, okay, so what are you going to talk about? What am I going to talk about? Let's not overlap. So I told him like one very specific story that I was going to tell about one of our, you know, particular game challenges. And it's like, you know, the third thing he started launching into, because he told me after the fact, he got up there and just with the heat and the tiredness, his mind went blank. And the only thing he could remember was the story that I had just told him that I was going to tell. So when he started telling it, I just like jumped in. I was like, no, you're telling my story. Stop right now. And the audience was laughing because we were just being crazy the way that we are.
So. I remember that. That was so funny.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Second only to Troy's giant picture about the floaters with the toilet and the 10 million rolls of toilet paper. Yeah. That was pretty funny.
Oh, that was the first year that Troy did something too, I think.
Yeah, he was the sound floater. I think the only sound floater.
He was the guy that came in as the sound floater, and then he's like, yeah, and I came out with like 2,000 plus sounds. And
yeah, he actually did.
Library.
He and Matthew Reed did the sound for Poppycock. They did all of that in like the last hour of the jam. They came up, we just threw a list of sound effects at them, and they came back with more than I could implement in the time we had remaining, and this awesome score that I like, I don't know, I really loved it and still have it like converted as an MP3 track on my iPod that I listen to sometimes.
Nice.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Did you guys do something for the Global Game Jam?
No. I just remember that I was really busy at the time. So I know Andrew and I had talked about it, but we were just like, we gotta do whatever it was we were busy with at the time, unfortunately. So maybe, you know, this year, we'll see how it goes. When we started Golden Gear, we did the experimental gameplay project for like 5 months in a row. And so, I mean, it took up a fair amount of time, you know, at least a week every month, where I was just like working on a free, fun Flash game just to share. And show off and stuff. So we were being a bit more selective once we started getting into like more paying work as we, you know, finished our first year and started moving into the second year. So we just had to, you know, pick and choose which jams and stuff we were going to do. Certainly, I would love to do, like, everything. I think they're doing, like, there's an Adventure Time game jam that's, like, happening coming this up, weekend yeah. or the coming what? Up soon.
Yeah, Adventure Time game jam, yeah.
I don't even know Adventure Time. I just know it's a thing that, like, a lot of my geeky friends like, and it's something I should be aware of.
Oh, my God.
It sounded like it'd be pretty cool.
So good. Yeah, we got a bag in the studio right here that's just covered in Adventure Time buttons.
Oh, yeah. So there you go.
It's pretty good. So, like, Adventure Time game jam.
Yeah, I don't know like really anything about it. I think Troy posted it on a Facebook about it, saying, "Yo, we should do this." And then Ricky Lima is like, "Yeah, let's do this. I want to do sound too and stuff like that." And then they mentioned me, and it's saying you can program it because I know how to use Multimedia Fusion 2 a bit, which isn't really programming, but people think I'm a programmer. Ricky does at least, and then I'm like, sure. But it looks cool though. I only saw the front page, and it had like the two main guys from Adventure Time just dancing. So I guess it's coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. I'm going to be too busy to take part, but certainly if anyone else is listening, check it out. It sounds like a really cool thing.
I'm glad I found out about it.
Yeah, I have no idea if you have to like incorporate like certain aspects of the show into it, or characters, or design. I don't know. It just looks... It sounds interesting, and it looks interesting because the show is just full of lulls.
And that's how everyone got sued. Just, oh, that's pretty good. We can put it on the market, make money off of it. Whoops.
That's their goal, though. To make so much money so they can extend so many seasons. But it's off, you know, lawsuits. question I have for you, Alex, because, like, I guess you and Andrew have been to a lot of game jams, of course, with TO Jam over the years. Do you find that the stuff that you work on as commercial material for your company, do you find a lot of those ideas come from when you're brainstorming game jam ideas or in that sort of process, or is it kind of completely separate?
They're definitely related, but not directly. Like, I can say this, virtually every game that we've made together, we've intended to take to a further release. I don't think we've actually completed any of those projects, because it seems, at least from my perspective, to be a very typical thing with Toe Jam. You know, the best of intentions, but then you get bogged down with, you know, paying the bills and going back to doing all the other work, and you lose the magic of that environment. We need almost like some echo Toe Jam event where you can come back in and like, okay, keep working on what you started and now finish it off, and here's another little mini jam, something like that. But we certainly do the same types of games, and the way that we like brainstorm the ideas would be similar for our design process and stuff, which is just random stuff and Andrew and I talking out ideas, bouncing ideas off of each other. One of the things I love telling people, I mean, the first Toe Jam game I made was based on a t-shirt that I got from ThinkGeek, and I think I've made like two other game ideas since then based on t-shirts from ThinkGeek. So I'll take inspiration wherever it comes from.
Yeah. That's great. Because you guys do also a lot of work in terms of, I guess, contract-based either, I guess, coding or art for...
we're not really artists. We're both programmers. So, yeah, okay. We do a lot of service development and stuff like that. And, you know, if needed, we can bring on contract artists and other and sound talent and stuff like that to do fuller projects, which is certainly something we'd like to move a bit more into. But at the same time, you know, we're really focused on trying to do our own stuff. So it is a bit of a means to an end. So, you know, we do the service work because we like to have our homes and be able to not be stressed out all the time about bills and stuff. But, you know, our passion is definitely just focusing on our own development and trying to do good stuff there.
That's awesome. I guess you're coming up to a talk soon with the Toronto Skill Swap. It's called Staying Afloat, Staying Alive, a panel discussion. And it's pretty much about balancing work life and personal life, pretty much. And I guess you're mentioning how, you know, you do the service work to kind of pay the bills and get by and whatnot, and also to work on your own stuff. And you're one of the speakers for this talk, so I guess can you say anything?
Like... A little bit of a preview, so to speak. Somewhat negative side of things, it's definitely been work-life balance is something I've struggled with in my career over the last 10 years, especially with the game development work. You know, you get crazy crunch times sometimes. If you read the Financial Peace article that they did about our company recently, you know, it starts with the line that Golden Gear was formed in the middle of like a 30-day period of 14-hour consecutive work days. And so I've done some like what I like to think is like EA level crunches over the years, but oh man, yeah. So it's definitely, like I said, it's a challenge just trying to keep that balance going and use lots of different techniques. At the moment, I just try and really make a point to relax. You know, I have clear set periods where I'm like, okay, like today, for example, I'm just like, today is not a work day. I mean, this, maybe some people might consider doing something like this a little bit worky, but for me, it's just kind of a fun thing. But that's certainly one of the ways that I try and balance it out and stuff.
Right.
We're going to be, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. I'm really looking forward to that talk, especially hearing some of the other people's opinions and how they handle that type of stuff. You definitely need a good work-life balance. I tend to just sort of follow my passion. So, like, right now, I'm in the process of redesigning Seraph, our first iOS release game, and I'm really excited about working on that. So, like, last night, yesterday was definitely one of my sort of designated, I'm not going to look at work, or I'm going to ignore my emails as much as possible so I don't get sucked back into working. But then in the evening, I was like, all right, now I want to do some design stuff that's just fun. And so I sat there with my sketchbook and was just basically drawing all these little squiggles and stuff to do different, like, spawn patterns and sine wave-based stuff for some of the new design for Seraph. And that little periods like that, you know, really help re-energize me and keep me balanced and stuff.
Yeah, and Seraph was a game that you guys released. Was it on the iOS that you previously released it on?
Yeah, so that one's been around for a while. It was actually one of the first true Golden Gear games. It started off as just a Flash game called Starfall that I made over 7 days for the experimental gameplay project for, I think it was May 2010. And the theme of that event was velocity, I believe, if I remember correctly. It was high speed related. So I made this game that is just, you're the star, you're constantly losing health, you're trying to smash into these dreams to regain your health, but you're going so fast that, you know, at full health, you're going too fast. You didn't really have the control you needed. So it was I was trying to go for this really cool balance where you're trying to, you know, stay around the creamy middle area. Didn't quite get the game balance there, truth be told, at least from my sort of critical post-mortem. But really liked the game. It you know, was sort of billed as the top game. So I, you know, for lack of a better term, say it won that competition. And Kotaku and Rock Paper Shotgun actually picked it up and did really nice reviews on it and pointed out a couple of the nice things. So definitely commented on the fact that it was like a small scale game that we put together. So when it came time to really like learn how to do the air mobile stuff, we figured, let's just take this game and run with it. So we're now, I think this is going to be sort of the fifth iteration of design, where it's really sort of the second time that we've sat down and are really looking at it and truly trying to design a fun game rather than just sort of update something we had on hand already to, you know, so it's a bit more substantial for inclusion in like the Tronotron, or, you know, we were learning the ins and outs of mobile conversion stuff when we released it initially for iOS. So now we want to go back and really try and make it a quality game, something that we can be proud of and stand behind and be like, play Seraph. It's an awesome experience. You're really going to like it. So we're deep into the work on that and hope it's all worth the effort in the end.
Mm. Yeah, I remember the first time I saw that was when it was on the Tron, when it came to the Autodesk building of George Brown for TO Jam 6.
Yeah,
that was so good. And I remember it was just me and Suggs trying to go for the high scores entire weekend. It was just him and me going. Finally, he's like, oh yeah, I got like twice my original score. I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, no, it was an interesting experience, especially as like a game developer interacting with his audience, right? So I'm sitting there and I'm working on my Tojan game, and then some of you guys came up, but Suggs in particular, he came up, and at that point, you know, I had done the usual thing where you set your quote-unquote developer high scores as sort of a benchmark of like, okay, I've been working on this for months now, I dominate this game, this is the best you can do. Suggs got like double or almost triple that score by the end of the weekend, and I was just like, oh my god, game killer. So I actually went and watched him play, And so some of the things he was doing actually caused me to change the design for the next iteration.
Really?
To like eliminate a few of the cheats that he had found or stuff that I hadn't quite, you know, seen how certain, like, I think ways he was like manipulating the time stop power.
I think one of the things he was doing was like just like tapping it so quickly before he got a dream.
Yeah.
Like, or something.
Yeah,
like that.
He was just like quick tapping it so he could like really sort of almost give the game like a strobe like effect, so
yeah,
he could really take advantage of that slowdown. So I know for a fact, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that one. That's one of the specific things I went and did. When I went back, I added a, so say your bar is, you know, 100% of your power, and it just, there was a usage over time cost. I added like an upfront cost of like 5% of the power just for activating it, and then the normal drain, so you couldn't just spam it like he was. And so again,
yeah,
it was like really good indirect feedback.
Yeah, well, that was also the same time that cephalopods came around as well. Cephalopod defense, and he and I just like decimated every score on that.
Yeah, I think for me, from that whole time, that was definitely like, I hadn't met Matt before that, and I became aware of him as the game killer because
he
was just going through every indie game and just destroying them.
Oh yeah, and then. Because we're doing the same thing for They Bleed Pixels, which you actually had Seraph in there for.
Yeah, we did
the
guest
level.
In
that, yeah.
I'm interested to see what he thought of the guest level.
I think he's going through the main thing and trying to destroy that.
Yeah,
but
I saw him talking about.
I've done the Seraph level on that, and it's so good.
I honestly, it was probably some of the best like level design work that I've done to date. I spent 20 hours just like tweaking it and adjusting stuff, and I had so much fun working on it. It was really weird because there's like, I had the core idea for anyone who's familiar with the game, and if you're not, you should already be playing They Bleed Pixels, so check out the Seraph guest
level. It's on Steam.
Yeah,
you
it's on
the
Steam.
Seraph level.
Shameless plug for Miguel and Andrew's game and my level on their game. But
it's self-promotion.
Yeah. So coming into the game, I just had the idea that I'm like, I wanted this big corridor that you fall down. I wanted to do the jerky thing where you start off right beside the exit, but there's no way you're getting there.
Oh.
I mean, I realize it's a bit of a classic game design move to do, but I couldn't resist. I was having too much fun. And for me, just that first fall, when if you use the downstrike attack, it just feels so satisfying to go flying down that corridor and smash on the ground and then start fighting people.
Because you also got the particles that are going up as well, so it's basically just like vertical Seraph.
Yeah, so
way.
I really liked it. And there was just so many little pieces that, like, again, I mostly just, that was the core idea, and then everything else I just kind of put together as I was going and was playing through, and was like, oh yeah, I feel like a jump should go here, or some saw should go here, and so much stuff just clicked the first time that like the end version of the level is actually really close to the first pass of the level, with only a few sections where Miguel was like, this is too difficult. The one tile, slime tiles as jumps when there's saws everywhere around you is just too jerky, man. So, you know, I went and adjusted a few things, but I was actually really proud. Again, like I said, the delta between where I started with the first draft and where the final draft was is pretty close. So I was really happy at just how much stuff just clicked and felt right for that level design. So I hope
cool.
other people enjoy it as well.
I bet they will, because, like, and, like, did you, like, do the art or have input on the art for that?
We gave them all the assets, but that was Miguel, and you know, in typical fashion, anyone who doesn't know this, I'm a huge fan of Miguel's work. You know, he's been a good friend to me and Golden Gear over the years, and I've just always like loved the work that he's done, which is why when the opportunity came up at Social Game Universe, jumped all over the chance to actually work on a project with him, doing some of the Facebook games there. But that's his treatment. That's all his work in the Seraph stuff, and he did an amazing job. And I was really, really proud. He definitely did us justice, and you know, I was really glad that he gave us the opportunity to be involved with that.
Yeah,
I'm kind of curious to see the parts that were too difficult for They Bleed Pixels, because it is
it's not the easiest game. It's pretty brutal.
Well, I mean the.
Whether like saws ever, you know, it could be.
Yeah, the easiest part to point out in particular, so in the when you jump down the corridor and you go into the first main room in the right, up on the top, There's a bunch of vertical saw sets where you can either, I didn't actually know this, that you could jump over them. I designed them to be drop jumps where you slide off the tile, fall, and then double jump underneath the saws up. And there's a little series of three. Those were all originally like one tile widths, and they're now like two or three tile widths. And they were just brutal to try and get through. And it was one of those ones where I sent Miguel the level, and he's like, okay, first of all, you should be able to pass your level like without like dying at all. So I had to sit there and play it again and again to prove that I could do it. And so that's where a couple of the adjustments came. One of the other ones was inspired by old Mega Man gameplay, actually, which is right near the end, you had to do this drop down, and you're kind of, as you're falling, shimmying to the left and right to dodge some saws. And then you fall down onto this platform and then jump over to your left over some more saws. That first platform, that didn't exist. That was all saws there, and you had to like perfectly fall and do like a little three-point shimmy and then double jump at exactly the right time just to make it over. And I did it, I think, maybe once, twice if I'm lucky, and then was just like, okay, I've tried to recreate this jump about 14 times now and can't do it without getting hit by at least one saw. And at that point, if you were speed running, there was already at least one or two other places where it was really unlikely you were going to get through without taking some damage. So I was like, all right, I'll just take it this part and put in the little platform. So yeah,
that sounds good. You get some like Quick Man levels going on there.
Yeah. The inspiration from Mega Man, just to mention it, was old Mega Man level where you're falling and there's all these laser beams coming in. You're trying to like quick slide and jump. And that's where that little piece of the Seraph level came
from. That's exactly what I was going to say. When you're saying, like, you're falling left and right, I'm just like, that level. Got it right in my mind right now. Yeah.
That's awesome, though. Because what we were mentioning before is that like Sug's kind of dominated Seraph on the arcade as well as Cephalopods, and then he ended up becoming a tester as well as Max, where they leave pixels, and ultimately you create a level for that game as well.
Yeah.
Like, did you guys have to test Alex's level?
We didn't have to, because at that point Miguel was more interested in us doing like the main thing, but Sugs and I got through that pretty quickly. And at the very end, it was like, oh, we still got like tons of time left. And I'm like, he's like, do you want to try some of the guest levels? I'm like, sure. And the first one I saw was Seraph. And I'm like, yeah, I looked a lot like Starfall. And he's like, oh, it is. And they changed the name and they did like the reveal. I'm like, oh, wait. First one I did.
Yeah, actually, it's funny you point that out. It's one of the things even I have a hard time remembering. To this day, I still call Seraph Starfall sometimes.
I call it that too, all the time.
If anyone ever wondered, the reason we changed the name is for searchability reasons. Starfall is like so saturated with science terms about meteors and stuff like that. Like,
really?
Yeah, unless we really push like Starfall game, which since then has become a pretty big standard, which we didn't go with that standard at the time because it wasn't the standard. We just decided to change the name and went with Seraph in the end because we thought it kind of fit with everything and the theme of the game and stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. It's always a tricky thing when you try and change the name of something. I think isn't Randy doing that with his Exodus game right now? They just announced they're changing the name.
I'm not too sure, actually. Yeah. I don't know.
I was pretty certain I'd seen that. And there's this other project, actually, we're attached to that's in the Idea Boost contest at the moment. The original name was Xenophonia Loud on Planet X, but it's looking like we're just going to be dropping the Xenophonia part because it was a bit too esoteric for some people, and just go with Loud on Planet X. So, I mean, again, it's a bit easier to do when the project's like starting up and stuff. Changing the name for something that's released is tricky. I certainly wouldn't recommend doing it. So I think at least for us, when we did the jump from, you know, the small web game to try and do like an iOS release, that was for us the right time to change the name. And we definitely wanted to differentiate between anyone who might have seen Starfall before just thinking it was going to be the same thing, because what we actually released was way more, like a lot more features and stuff. It was still a lot of sort of moving parts that needed a much more smoothing and design to it, but you know, it was definitely a different game than Starfall.
Yeah, and the name itself is already like, it's not close to Starfall, but it's close enough. Like Seraph Starfall.
Yeah, it works.
It's got an S, an R, and an F sound in there.
Yeah,
you got it all.
Cool. So I wanted to bring up Toronto After Dark Gate, Alex, because you're doing a lot of organization stuff for that event. Can you tell us a bit about it and maybe when people can submit their games?
Yeah, sure. One very, very slight clarification. I'm not doing some of the organization stuff. That's all me. So Darkade's basically my sort of like pet project for the year. I've been going to the After Dark, Toronto After Dark Film Festival for a couple years now. Absolutely loved it. And then when we finished work on Poppycock, happened to become aware of the Fantastic Fest in Austin, when the fact that they have an indie gaming component, and actually got upset. I was just like, what the hell? Toronto's awesome. Like, I don't know. I mean, not to cause beef with the States or anything. We're better than Austin. But why didn't we have anything like that? So I tried to, you know, through Hand Eye Society and stuff, suggest the idea and just sort of feel some people out and see if they're interested in it. And then through the TIFF Nexus Peripherals Initiative that I was part of, I actually got to come in direct contact with one of the organizers, Peter Kaplowski. So once, you know, I got a bit of a relationship with him, I told him what my idea was. He took it back to Adam Lopez and the other Toronto After Dark organizing team and basically pitched them on the Darkade idea. And then they let me run with it. So I've been keeping in close contact with Peter and Adam just to, you know, make sure everything I'm doing is kosher with what they want and how the Darkade's going to fit into the festival. But if all goes well, this will be the first year of the annual Darkade, hopefully. So the call for submissions is ending this Friday coming up, September 14th. And we are taking indie games of basically any type, Mac, PC, iOS, Vita. You know, we will have some restrictions once we actually do the selections in terms of like what equipment is available and stuff. We're still figuring out some of those details, but we have gotten games of all those types. You know, I've gotten people from Australia sending us a UDK-based game. A bunch of Toronto indies have sent us like a PS Vita title and some web-based stuff, some Steam-based stuff. We're hoping, you know, people like Miguel and stuff will submit Daybleed Pixels and something like that. And so far, it's going pretty good. You know, we're hoping to show 18 games over the 9 nights. So we're going to show 2 games a night. And looking at the current submission pool, we're definitely going to have more than enough games to choose. So I should be able to curate some very cool cross-section of games.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, like I said, for me, it's just a huge passion project, bringing together the way that I like to tell it to people, and like there's two sort of vacations that I book off. Like January 1st, I know that later in the year these things are happening. Toe Jam is one, After Dark is the other. And so being able to bring After Dark into the fold with some of the game stuff, and again, hopefully it goes well and they invite us back to do it again next year, I'm really excited about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, good.
What kind of games? Oh, sorry.
No, I definitely see this actually turning into a yearly thing. I mean, the name's clever.
Yeah.
And that's 80% of the battle right there.
For that, I have to give credit to Matt Hamill. You know, we were sitting there and we were brainstorming some stuff at Bento Miso, and he just threw out Darkade, and I was just like, dude, that is genius.
Yeah. Oh, if people remember the name, they're gonna be like, yeah. Yeah. No, that's good. That sounds...
Yeah, sorry, Arthur, you had mentioned types of games. I forgot to say. So we're taking, like I said, in terms of the physical format, you know, anything, basically. And then we're looking for stuff that's thematically either or action, horror, cult, sci-fi, fantasy. It gets a little weird. Like, we're definitely looking for experimental games. So not necessarily, like, they all have to be experimental. I really just want to show... and a solid cross-section of games to show, like, this is what the indie scene is about, and we're producing stuff that's on par with what else is out there, you know, under the mandate of what the Toronto After Dark's doing. So there is a few things that have been submitted that would fall under the experimental category that I'm definitely going to have to look at and carefully try and be like, okay, is this far enough out there that we can just call it what any type of game we want, or is it, like, really something a bit more specific that just doesn't fit with the mandate? I've been trying to not look at the pool of games other than just sort of collecting them and sticking them in the folder on my hard drive for the moment, just so I don't sort of pick any early favorites other than just to check that, you know, we're getting enough games in and just getting a sense of what sort of the cross-section is. So Saturday of next week, I'm really excited. I'm going to be sitting down and just have this awesome cross-section of games to look at and go through.
That's cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
And it looks like the Toronto After Dark Film Festival is from the 18th to the 26th of October.
Yeah.
Isn't that during DigiFest as well, I guess?
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting. I'm actually still trying to track down... I guess Samantha is handling a lot of the DigiFest stuff. So yeah. I need to talk to her about that. But my understanding is we will have overlap with DigiFest. There's also going to be some overlap with the Toe Jam Arcade. But the interesting thing about the format of After Dark is it is quite literally After Dark. The Darkade doesn't start until about 11:30 at night. It's because it's running as like a side event as part of their pub socials. So the Toronto After Dark films are being shown, and then as soon as the films are done, around 11:30, people are heading over to Popper's Pub, you know, using their passes to get into the little back room where the After Dark pub social is going on, and they'll be able to play the games then. So we'll be there. It'll be late nights, you know, 11 o'clock to 2 in the morning or so, 9 nights in a row. Plus watching the films, because I don't want to miss any of the films.
Nice.
So that week's going to be pretty intense. Probably to try and book off as much of the daytime work as possible. But yeah, it should be interesting. So with the tie-in to DigiFest, I would certainly love that anyone going to DigiFest, you know, consider coming out and checking out the Darkade in the evening if you don't have anything going on.
Yeah, because then it'll be like pretty much full days for anyone who's interested in attending both, because then... You know, DigiFest is so late during the day. I don't think they have any night events at all.
Yeah.
So they can always, you know, check out the movie afterwards or go to the social or whatever they're interested in.
Yeah, so that should be good.
That's awesome. Cool. And so, yeah, that's right. This Friday coming up, the 14th, you said?
Yeah, and basically they'll take games until, 11:59 p.m. standard thing. I'm actually going to be at the panel we were talking about earlier that day, so I really won't be looking at the games until probably Saturday morning, and but yeah, I will be checking the email timestamps just for the sake of fairness for everyone around. And then what's going to happen is basically I'll go through all the games. You know, I'm probably going to get a couple other people to offer me some critiques and feedback for some of the games that get shortlisted. And the idea is we're going to pick the 18 games that we'd like to show. Send out the thank yous to everyone who submitted, let the people know that they're, you know, been chosen to be shown in the festival, start figuring out any logistical challenges of showing their games, and, I just lost my train of thought. Updates. We will be allowing the people who have submitted their games to send updated builds up until about 2 days before the actual Darkade itself.
So even if, like, I guess their game isn't really... Like, you want your game to be as complete as possible for the submission, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'm judging your game based on what I'm looking at, not what you're telling me is going to come later.
Yeah, of course.
But if, you know, people have asked, and figured I'd just mention this now, since the opportunity's here, that, yeah, you know, again, if your game is chosen based on the build that it was, and you do some bug fixes, tweaks, throw in an extra page or something like that, it's not a big deal to send us an updated build later. But again, that'll be handled like through private channels, through direct emails and stuff like that.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, and that's happening, I guess. Yeah, so Friday's going to be the last submission date for the Darkade. Alex is going to be at the Skill Swap Talk that night, along with Leslie Fortroy, Toy, Ryan Henson Crane, Michael Todd, and some surprise guests, I'm guessing. And yeah, so definitely check that out. It's going to be at the George Brown College Game Development Building at 341 King Street East, 5th floor, room 515. And I believe it's free to attend, so you guys can hear all about how Alex likes to balance his work life and personal life.
Yeah, I work a lot and then I drink beer. That's the secret balance these days.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Inside info on the Toronto Indie Guys podcast.
He's going to show up with a six pack and be like, let me demonstrate. Let me demonstrate how I balance things.
And yeah, I guess we can mention Golden Gear released, well, not released, but you've worked on two games that have been released lately.
Yeah, we've done some client work recently, so we were really happy to work with Strapped to a Meteor, which is a game development company out of Seattle, and do the programming for their game Mr. Dreamer, which is a universal app for iOS, so iPod Touch, iPhones and iPad are all supported. And then we also were working with Michael Kohler, doing an aggro game for his MMO World Alpha. So we made a sniper-themed rail shooter called World Alpha Sniper. We're actually just in the process of doing some updates to that right now. So the original game was released with just like one mode of play, two levels, five different guns you could get, some of them unlockable. And we've, after doing some review, we just released a new update that adds additional support. So originally we only had like iPhone 4 and iPad 2 supported. Now we support the iPhone 3GS, iPod Touch, iPad 1, new iPad. Although I did get a crash report that I need to look into. So Monday I'll be doing some more stuff. But we're actually doing some game design updates with them right now. So we're going to have another new version, a second update coming out, hopefully within the next month or so, which actually splits the game into three modes. So you can choose, you know, do I want to do just like a rail shooter where snipers pop up and I, you know, try and find them and shoot them? Do I want to do a timed marathon mode where you have a set amount of time and every sniper you shoot, you get a bit more time? Or we have a survival mode where the snipers actually are shooting back at you if you linger too long and don't find them and shoot them. So I'm excited about those changes because I really think, you know, along with our producer Mike, it's his project, that it'll add a needed element of a good core gameplay to that game. But World Alpha Sniper is already out. You can check it out in the current version. And, you know, hopefully we'll have another one coming out very shortly.
Cool. That's cool. Do you have any other questions, Max?
Were there any questions that came out of the Facebook golf questions?
There were some. Yeah, we could definitely mention it. Let me just bring up the list here.
I think Kale wanted to know why you're so awesome.
No, why so sexy.
Say, why are you so sexy?
I don't have a good answer for that. I don't know, black magic and trickery. I said some funny answer online. I can't remember what it was at this point. Oh, it was Essence of Hypnotoad. That's what it is.
That's it.
Every day I wake up and I rub myself with Hypnotoad, so I just have this alluring charm people can't quite look away from.
Nope. Just like, leave there.
Yeah. Troy, I think, asked, how good is the kimchi burrito?
Oh, God. Spicy pork breakfast kimchi burrito at GDC. It's one of the two things that I dream of. So when we went down to GDC, Andrew had done a bunch of search for places to go try out food from. And there was one that we didn't get to, which had the like maple bacon donuts or whatever, which just sounded so good. But it was so far and we were tired that night. But HRD Coffee Shop, this is a place he found. We went there every single day for the week that we were at GDC. And every day Andrew got the spicy pork breakfast kimchi burrito. It is amazing. It is like one of the craziest like Asian diner fusions I've ever seen. And it was just so awesome. But I mean, I kind of describe it as like it's the Irish car bomb of burritos, in that you don't explain what it's made of because individually the parts are all weird, right? And so it's like, you know, it's got kimchi and it's got kiwi and it's got all this other stuff that normally like individually I wouldn't really be a fan of. But put together, it just made this magical blend of flavor. I remember the second day I was eating, or we were there, when I actually tried it the first time, you know, I took my big bite and I'm tasting it. I'm like, oh my God, dude, okay, you're right. This is awesome. And then I'd eaten down enough of the one side that it was starting to come unbalanced. So, you know, I turn around, start eating the other side of the burrito. And I'm like, oh my God, there's a whole new melange of flavors on this side. What the hell? So it was pretty good. So yeah, that burrito is awesome. Troy is fully aware of its awesomeness, having come with us there. And he actually has found a recipe since then that he's made on his own, which he said is pretty comparable, that I'm dying to try out.
Need to get this recipe.
Yeah, well, it is pretty good.
We'll post the recipe underneath the episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll do an episode with the recipe, you know, us making the burrito.
Yeah. Toronto indie guys, cook.
Yeah. The other one I have to mention, just because it was so good, Ryan Henson Creighton took Andrew and I out to lunch with him one day at a place called Troposueno Mexican Kitchen, and they had a Mexican meatball soup. I can't remember the name of it properly. It starts with an A, and it's some weird thing that I can't remember the name of. It is amazing as well, and it was really good. We went back there two or three times.
Is that the place that was in between like the bakery and the Indian place?
Yeah, I think so.
We went there for dinner, didn't we?
I didn't. You guys did.
Right, we didn't. Oh, God, the food there
they're so good.
Yeah, so anyone who goes to GDC or San Francisco, HRD Coffee Shop is amazing. And Trapasueño Mexican Kitchen is also really freaking good.
Oh, man, the food. Like, and it was so, and like, it was so much food for what you paid.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
We went for lunch one day and got the burritos, and it was like, it was almost too much for me.
Yeah, and they're fast with those burritos, too.
Yeah.
Like, you get in, you get out, pretty much.
Yeah.
That was so good. Because we were told, there was the one night, I think we all tried to go there, but we ended up going to the Indian place instead.
Yeah. Because
it was way too full, but Jim and Ryan kept saying, like, it's life-changing Mexican.
Yeah, it's basically like, how Ryan explained it.
That's what they kept saying, life-changing. We're like, what do you mean life-changing? He's like, life-changing. You will have to reevaluate your life after you have this. And we went there, and it was just, and it was just like,
yeah, I mean, honestly, if you really get down to it, the Mexican meatball soup was just like a creamy velvet on your tongue. It was so good. I'm now really hungry. You guys are jerks.
You know, let's just all just go back to San Francisco right now.
Oh, man. Honestly, Andrew and I are waiting here. Like, basically once or twice a month, I'm just like, dude, I was thinking about the burrito again. I miss it so much.
There'd be those times where you're just like, why do you look so sad, man? I'm thinking about the burrito.
Yeah. No, it was good. I mean, we really liked it, and the owner actually hooked us up, because we kept going, you know, like, every day, and we usually were bringing a different person with us each time. So I think by the second or third day, he's like, so, you guys obviously like this place. Like, what's going on? And I'm like, oh, you know, we're in town for this game developers convention. We found this place on Diners, Drive-Ins, whatever that show is.
I can't remember the name.
Andrew's found it there. And, so he's like, oh, okay, cool, great. So you guys just planning to keep coming here and something? We're like, oh, yeah, dude, we'll be here every day until we got to fly back. He's like, okay, cool. Make sure you let me know when it's your last day. So we told him, you know, on the final day, we're like, yeah, and, you know, we really enjoyed eating here. It's our final day. He's like, awesome, breakfast is on me. We're just like, what?
Whoa.
That is badass. So, yeah, you know, they had their standard sort of buy five, get one free card. So I guess he was really just sort of giving us that value. But still, for us, it was like, we're always coming back here. Anytime anyone asks me about San Francisco, the first thing I say is you have to go to HRD Coffee Shop. It is amazing.
Nice.
And I just want to point out once again that Jamie Wu really should have come with us, because the shrimp tempura sub with sriracha aioli was awesome.
Oh, man.
There you have it, guys. Yep. There is Tonoin, guys. First guest review for food. It's San Francisco GDC, so you'll have to go there anyways.
We should probably make this a regular thing.
Yeah.
80's got to eat, and I'm sure they have some awesome recipes that they like to do, so.
Should probably do how to cook dinner for 5 people under $5 one day.
The indie feast.
Yep.
Main ingredients are craft dinner. And
ramen, 3 different
ways. Ramen, yeah.
I'd like that. That'd be good.
Last question I got from Jim McGinley was, what makes you angry?
Well, for McGinley, I'd have to say people who don't answer emails in a timely fashion probably at least annoys me, if nothing else. But I don't know. I mean, those who spend any significant amount of time with me actually quickly learn that I am a somewhat angry person. But I can seem to be somewhat pleasant most of the time. And it's certainly something I try and, you know, put forth the positive image of myself more so than the angry one. But honestly, if you want to see me angry, just hang out with me at a toe jam and watch me code. Like, 30% of my day is me just telling my computer it's an asshole.
Awesome.
So there you have it, guys. Don't walk into a dark alleyway with Alex there, because he'll probably get mad. And
you wouldn't like him when he's angry.
He'll throw his computer down after, like, a toe jam.
Yeah.
Cool. Pretty good. All right, so I guess that about wraps it up then.
Yeah. Looks
cool. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. Oh, our pleasure.
Thanks a lot for being on the Toronto Indie Guys podcast. Yeah. We'll have Andrew come on.
Good stories.
Sometime really soon. Yeah. Cool. But, so, yeah, anyways, guys, that's episode 26 of the Toronto Indie Guys podcast. We had Alex Bethke today from Golden Gear. My name is Arthur Maris.
I'm hungry now.
And that's
I'm also hungry.
Episode.
Yeah. Lunch.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah.
Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Sorry, I gotta plug that.
That's all good.